2.2 have previously been before committees of this of the board. Each has to do with athletic contracts.
Anything to add, Ross?
No, I think just what Chairman Higgins said about the committee review and Coach Cowles on women's basketball, Ken McDonald, giving them four-year windows to operate the program, and the matters we went through with men's basketball and the salary reduction, I think, have been well documented. So.
Entertain a motion.
Move approval.
Second.
We approving 2.1 and 2.2?
Yes.
Motion by Region Zilke, second by Region
Kennedy
to approve action items 2.1 and 2.2. All those in favor, aye.
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 Opposed, no. So approved. Item 2.3 has previously been distributed to the board for your consideration. Athletic contract with the baseball coach. Ross, anything?
Just asking for approval of our new baseball coach's contract. It's comparable within our conference, salary-wise, benefit-wise, bonus-wise, incentive-wise as well, and it puts us in a great position to continue the momentum that we have in our baseball program. Coach Myers.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Region Myers, seconded by Region Kennedy. The question, all those in favor, aye.
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 Opposed, no. So approved. Moving to action item 2.4, having to do with purchase of real property. That information has been supplemented and distributed to the board with respect to the farm, WKU Farm. Professor Esten, anything to address?
Most of you are familiar with the map. If not, it's on page 39 in your board meeting booklet. This is a piece of property that we have surrounded for many, many years, and we surround it on three sides. Natural Parkway is on the, I guess that would be the western border. But this is a property that we've coveted for some time. It's been privately owned by a local family, and through some dynamics in that family, they are now ready to offer it to sell to us, and we are buying it at the appraised price and feel like that is a fair price for this 24 and a half acres of land that will complete the footprint for our university farm. Blaine, Dean of College of Ogden College of Science and Engineering, is here in the event that anybody would have any questions about this property. It's been something that our Department of Agriculture has been anxious to get hold of and has some good plans for use of this property going forward.
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Regent Kennedy, seconded by Regent Johnson.
Mr. Chair, do we keep the? I'm curious. Do we keep the buildings?
Yes.
Are they all useful?
Yes. Well, Blaine, I don't know how usable they are.
Well, actually, the house is in pretty good shape. They had just built another apartment on it. But what's interesting is I was a TA for George Bennett here, and I actually helped move that log cabin out there.
Huh?
So we're going to restore that. I actually have a carving off of one of the mantelpieces. But
cool.
You know, they've been a long-time friend, and I'm sorry to see George go, but his son is very like the idea that we're going to put an artist out there.
Right.
We're going to have a collaboration with Potter College, and we're already building a kiln out there this fall. We figured we could have a display plus ag tourism, mm-hmm. and we can also help educate people where their food comes from, potentially use that house down the road either for a restaurant of some type, a small one, where they can actually get food that they've generated off the farm and get an idea. So Musket Building, Terry Leeper has had workshops here with some of the best people across from Williamsburg and other places that reconstruct muskets, and so we can do that out there. A lot of things to educate the public about heritage and art and so forth, so I think it's a great collaboration.
The log cabin, I mean, is it authentic?
And yeah.
Is it historic?
From Anna.
From where?
From Anna. It's not got any great value. I mean, it was a original small log cabin that was up in Anna that he wanted to make a cabin so he could give his sons and daughters the house and he could live out there in the cabin with his wife.
That's right.
Okay.
Hold on this.
Any other discussion?
You know you're selling it now.
I would point out that this is coming out of the University Reserve. From time to time, we use the University Reserve Fund for the acquisition of property. And as our practice and policy, we will then, over time, replenish the University Reserve in the normal budgeting of university resources to maintain the current $3 million reserve level in our University Reserve Fund.
And that was my only question. Is you're comfortable with our potential to do this, even in possibly challenging times?
Well, we can't control when it comes to us, because if we didn't buy it, They'll sell it on the open market, and
I know it's been under discussion for 2 years.
Yeah, we would be making a major mistake if we let it get into others' hands. That we would then, who knows what the future might bring in terms of eventually completing our farm footprint. So again, that's why we have a reserve fund.
Regents, ready for a vote? All those in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. So approved. Action 2.5 is our campus diversity plan, which we will participate in the presentation yesterday afternoon at our retreat.
So moved.
Motion by Regent Johnson.
Second.
Seconded by Regent Porter. Any discussion?
Richard, would you repeat what you said yesterday?
No. Ready for the vote? All those in favor, aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. So approved. And our final action item results from yesterday's discussion of our revisions to the bylaws. I think each of you have a revised copy to place this morning as a result of our conversations yesterday. The appropriate changes have been color-coded.
Mr. Chairman, one thing I might bring up. We talked at length about terms, and as you know, 9 of our regents have term limits. And faculty regent and staff regent do not. And I might just ask you, Mr. Chairman, after quite a bit of discussion yesterday, if you might want to think about us taking that under deliberation and maybe get somebody to give us some more insight on that, Mr. Chairman. Before I bring that, before that's brought to any kind of a motion.
So noted. Do I have a motion for approval of the first reading of the bylaws?
So moved.
Motion by Regent Zilke.
Second.
Seconded by Regent Haskins. Moving back to discussion on the bylaws. Any debate or discussion?
I'm just curious. So what is Jim referring to in terms of term limits? Because
All of us have. We can be appointed 2 times to 6-year terms. The chairman has, based on what this board has approved, can serve for 2 years. Although he's elected 1 year and then can serve again, has to be elected again. And we had conversation yesterday. There's no term limit on the faculty regent and on the staff regent. And we spoke about maybe limiting that to 2-3-year terms to coincide with the rest of the board. And that's
wouldn't that be state law? I mean, we don't control that, do we, Dave? I would think
it's not covered under state law on the successive terms, because they're elected by their respective committees.
Oh, I see.
Faculty.
That's what you're talking about.
So
you're talking
just
about
our house here. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
We're elected through the democratic process of our constituencies.
Okay. Trying to limit you then, huh?
Apparently.
I see.
No, it'd be grandfathered.
Yeah.
No, my.
Well, I think Patty should serve as long as she
wants. I'm not making a motion.
Won't
I'm making
years.
A recommendation.
Won't be as long as you're going to be here.
Please be advised. I'm not making a motion. I'm making a recommendation okay. to look into that further. If I ever do make a motion, it would be to grandfather the present people that are on the board.
I got you. Thank you for the explanation.
Yes.
I had a comment about a completely different subject in the bylaws.
Different than, but on the bylaws?
Oh, no, on the bylaws, but not.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, we do have a motion and a second.
Uh-huh. Right.
We're now in discussion. Regent Minter?
I was glad to see that per our discussion yesterday, that the last addition is for Article 7.1 is now that there will be an automatic 5-year review, which I think is a great little jog for any group. The other thing, and after reading the bylaws, which I think was an outstanding exercise, and I hadn't looked at them in a few years. We just saw the faculty handbook, which governs all of the faculty policies, employment and hiring, credentialing, tenure, promotion, firing for cause, etc. All of that is covered in there. And previously, that had been interpreted as, you know, being under the policies of the university that had to go to the Board of Regents for proper approval. And although I'm fine with this revision going to the board as an information item this time, I had talked with Provost Emsley about this, and I would suggest going forward, particularly since the Article 1 makes it very clear that the board has the oversight responsibility on all policies of the university. This is the single most important document that governs every aspect of faculty life, right down to when and where we're going to show up. And the 17th edition was approved by this board at the October meeting in 2006. And I do think as we go forward, and you will be getting we'll be seeing a revision every year. As we change things, we're just going to update annually instead of doing these big grand 4-year committees. But I would urge administrative counsel to send this forward to the board so that anything governing the policies that cover faculty have the stamp of approval of this Board of Regents as a consent item, you know, not a line item veto item, but as a consent item. I think it's important that this goes the distance so it has as much integrity and credibility with faculty as it possibly can. And it has been precedent in the past.
Given the University Senate's prerogative to have this as an ongoing document that would receive revision from time to time, I think it's important that the board be aware, but if the Senate is going to update the handbook from time to time, it's a fine line between the independent domain of the University Senate and the faculty to govern the academic enterprise. And my personal feeling is that the board should place a good deal of trust in the Senate as regards to the faculty handbook. If it were something that were to be updated every 5 or 10 years, then I would agree that the board approval of it should be necessary. But given the current intent to update it on a regular basis, you'd be coming to the board quite frequently, and I'm not sure that's the role of a Board of Regents to be that specific in the work of the faculty. I think this board should trust the faculty to govern the domain, the academic priorities of the institution, and not be so engaged in minutiae of a faculty handbook.
Well, these are employment policies.
Well, I understand that.
These are employment policies.
But the board will approve employment actions. But that's my perspective, given the current inclination of the Senate. But if the board would like to approve each change in the handbook as it comes forward, would be happy to bring that to you, but that would have the potential to be a consuming process for this board.
Oh, and there's precedent for, again, it's been handled different ways in the past. I did some research on this, and the full handbook, 17th edition, was approved with no comment in October of 2006. And then in 2001, there were several major changes, like changes to university distinguished professor selection criteria and things like that, that Dr. Birch had brought for the board because these were going to be amendments to the standing handbook. But there's a lot of precedent. That's just one of those things you bring to the board, like you bring the Master of Music or any of that stuff. And I think certainly there's, you know, since the Board of Regents is on the hook in the faculty handbook as, you know, in a case of termination, we are the court of last resort, I think there was a sense, certainly there's an expectation in a lot of quarters, it was just, well, that's the last stop. So believe me, having done that committee for 4 years, wasn't trying to buy anybody any work, and ultimately call was made. But it's probably something that could use consent agenda, stamp of approval. It should not be something that this body line item edits, but it would have a lot more integrity if this
board... Hard to prove something without going through it and knowing what you're approving.
Well, we read everything.
Provost Emsley, you have a thought?
Board considers this, I'd like to point out that I did bring a copy of the 18th edition, and it's this thick. The 17th edition was 3 times thicker, and the reason for that is many of the essential policies represented in this book are represented in it as links to websites external to the document itself. And therefore, I'm wondering whether you're talking about approving changes to this document or on the website to which the document refers, which is an interesting situation. You know, in many cases, it says, you know, a full description of the policy related to UDPs, emeritus status, whatever, may be found at, and a link is there. This, in a large sense, will make this a living document through routine, but more regular policy changes, of which I stress we've added about 60 policies this year already.
And there will be more in the months ahead.
Absolutely.
And that would, in my opinion, because the Administrative Council spent a lot of time on these policies, and almost every week we reviewed a different policy or policies, and that will go on. And my feeling is that would be very cumbersome for this board to be engaged in that level of detail.
I suggest that President Rand will share policies here on the two with the board. We have a policy on policies. It provides the procedures and policies governing the creation of new policy. This is actually a very important document. It gives the President final authorization on all new policies across every division within the university. Subject to consent, advice from the Administrative Council, and also for certain policies, the University Senate and the Council of Academic Deans are expressly involved in the formation of the policies. So perhaps it would be useful to share that document, which provides the user the privilege of addressing policies.
Yep.
Well, I think that's absolutely right. So, and we had talked a lot about precedent, the difference between precedent and policy. And precedent has been that this board put its imprimatur upon it.
Any further discussion? Call for a vote on the first reading of the proposed bylaws. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. The chair recognizes Regent Myers' suggestion on looking into the term limit situation. I think it's important that our faculty and staff have input in that regard. So, would you be so kind as to form or compile the appropriate faculty and staff group to come back to this board in October with any recommendations they may have with regard to the term limit question.
I bet.
And I think it's important to recognize what he said, that it would not apply to the sitting regents who currently are serving, that this would be after they had chosen not to run for re-election anymore. In other words, their successors would be the only one it's applied to if it were to be enacted.
Good point. Are the regents comfortable with the chair's actions in that regard?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
And we have an information item. John, you're up again.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Printed report is on page 42 through 45 in your agenda item, which profiles all of the construction projects that of major projects that are either currently engaged in on the campus. However, we have prepared a brief presentation that covers some of the highlights of the some of the projects that are ongoing, so we can give you a virtual tour and let you see some of the things that are going on across campus. We're probably at this time going to focus mainly on those projects that are causing some campus disruption this summer. We always have very busy summers. This summer has been more busy than usual, and we want to share with you some of what's going on and entertain any questions you might have. I've asked Brian Russell, our director of the Planning, Design, Construction Department, to make the presentation, and we'll go from there. Brian?
Thank you all for your time. This summer has been extremely busy. We are focusing on this report just as a supplement information on projects that are disturbing a lot of ground here at West Kentucky University. We have a music hall, the Science and Technology Hall roof replacement, Margie Helm Library, College Heights, crease and lot reconfiguration, rock wall restoration, walkways, steam, and then we have a large renovation project at our Grice Hall. This is the original site that we started the music hall building. We're just kind of phasing through some of the site work. This is very current photograph of where we are to date for this project. You can see the shell, but there's also a lot of work that's already taken place on the inside of this building. That is our music hall, rehearsal hall area. It's about 26,000 square feet in total. It's going to have a grand entrance. It's going to be a limestone exterior. It's going to be a very nice building when it's finished and fit into the inside where there was an existing music building years ago. Something of interest is that we continue to hear on the news about LEED, Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. We have installed two large tanks underground to capture non-potable stormwater from this site and from the building that will then be reused, collected, put into trucks, used for irrigation, et cetera. It's about 40,000 gallons. These are some of the things that we're being required to do by the state, House Bill 2, and it has to do with LEED and has to do with the regulations, but it's something that'll be out of sight, out of mind, and I just bring it to your attention that we are trying to reduce our energy usage. We're trying to reuse more of our water instead of using water that's been processed through City of Bowling Green, Kentucky, and Warren County Water System. This project is our Environmental Science and Technology Hall building. That building was built in 1975. The roof was on there approximately 34, 35 years. We had developed many, many leaks. Standard roofs are right around a good 20-year warranty period. So we got really good use, and that's a compliment to the facility of management and the constant care of continually to maintain a roof properly so that it lasts as long as it did. One of the things that we do as our department and others is that when we're given a project to re-roof a building, and we have re-roofed several, one, it's going to preserve the integrity of our buildings, but two, we don't just put a roof back on. We actually look at the requirements and codes, and this building did not have any insulation value to speak of. We've raised that insulation value to also help us in the future for reducing the operating costs. I think we've all looked at some of the GIS, GPS overheads, and Dr. Ransdell's talked about how many roofs we have replaced on our campus. And I can't stress to you how important that is, because we also have some buildings that need to be re-roofed, and we have done a very good job over the last 10 years of continually tackling things that are out of sight, out of mind, but we're really doing some good things on this campus, which will allow us to concentrate on other things in the future. This is Margie Helm Library. These are round top windows. There's about 14 of them in the building. That building was built in 1931. They're very large windows. They're single pane windows. They're very energy inefficient. These windows have gotten to the stage of their life where they have started to really fail. We took the opportunity and are currently replacing those 14 windows. The window in the center was actually installed yesterday. This project will be done before school starts. But you can see the type of work and the actual beauty of a new window that's double pane, very energy efficient, and also has a solar coating that helps reflect the sun's rays from going inside the library. There's 99 of the deteriorated, and you can see how poorly these steel windows have rusted over the years. Again, very, very dated, and we've already completed the replacement of 99 of those windows on Margie Helm Library, which is a very important building, and is scheduled in our master plan to be renovated in the years to come. So again, we're trying to tackle some of our deferred maintenance items, which I think is an excellent idea. This is the top of our hill. This is where our visitors, our new students, visiting scholars, this is the way we direct them into our campus. And we had gotten into such a poor shape on the top of the hill and going down College Heights Boulevard, and we were having continual major 10-inch water line failures, and we were having a lot of structural fatigue on this road, that a project was started this summer. We took that section of road out and piping that was failing. We made a full replacement and restoration of the top of the hill, so our guests, when they're greeted, will be, wow, this is a beautiful campus, as soon as they drive into our campus. We've also put some traffic calming items. We have this summer completed a phase of making this section of roadway a two-way. We put some, like I said, traffic calming items in to slow people down, to protect our students. And this is the shot of the new completed road. And again, we've also taken care of a major 10-inch water line that feeds about 10 of our buildings at the top of the hill. And why that's important, that's what all of our buildings, fire safety, is tied into at the top of this hill. So it's very important. This is our, for folks that went to school here, we called it the Egypt lot, but it is officially called our Creason lot. Has about 690 parking spaces. One of the problems we had with this lot is that its traffic configuration was very poor. Had a lot of event problems, didn't have sidewalks and safety features. So this is a photograph of the start of construction. This is a photograph of a couple of days ago. If you drive by Monday, this lot will be completely finished, striped. We've also enhanced ADA accessibility. We've put in a heavy-duty roadway that goes through. We'll also allow right-in, right-out to this parking lot. This is going to be a great benefit for events. It's going to be a great benefit to our transit system that is helping us reduce the stress of parking immediately on our campus, and giving our bus routes a better mechanism to operate in this. But I think when you see this build, this is just done. We've gone to double wide driveways so that when you're pulling in and pulling out of spaces, without compromising the overall number of parking spaces for this lot. So they did a very nice job. We've added some nice green space and islands. This is just a photograph that was, or actually a slide generated from our GIS documents that we've been working on. This is on our rock walls. The VFA study done for our campus in 2007 identified about $800,000 in restoring, replacing our rock walls on our campus. we've gone out and done our own survey and identified and read some areas that we really have failing walls. And we've started a project this summer taking old walls that are failing, doing restoration. And this summer we've budgeted about $150,000. This will be a continual project that goes by several summers, making repairs to walls that are just truly, some of them are 60, 70 years old, and they need some, I'm going to call it tender loving care. They just need some work so that we can preserve that historic look as part of our campus. Walkway step replacement repairs. Another GIS document made, also in conjunction with our facilities management group here at Western. The items in red are areas that are safety concerns. We work with our EH&S department. Anytime there's an accident reported, trip or a fall that involves a report, those items are identified. We do research that. We put it on our maps. And we last year did about $100,000 worth of work. This summer we're going back and doing another significant section. And we are just continually improving our walkway and safety for our students and our guests. That's the site after. These are just some examples. We had a lot of failing stairways that, again, were probably 60, 70 years old in some cases. Some of them probably are not that old. But we had to take that historic site, take that stair down, and that is the refurbished set of stairs, preserving some of our history. This is just a little section going down Normal and the amount of manpower it takes to get in and do all of this work in summer. This is an area that, as we continue to expand and grow, this is happens to be a new walkway around one of our residence halls. Now, this is the project that is probably the most visible on our campus. We had five locations this past winter in our steam lines that completely failed. When I say completely failed, they were catastrophic. A lot of conversation on our campus, why don't you go ahead and fix it? Well, as you can see, this has taken out an old steam line. It's probably been in place 40 to 50 years. You can see through the years the number of utilities and things that a contractor must deal with to actually even excavate and work under and maintain and replace as they go through these projects. This is men working in the ditch. They work through the mud, they work through the summer, they work through 99 degrees. It is brutal, pretty tough on those fellows. But we are making a lot of progress. This is at the top of the hill around Weatherby and Potter Hall. This site here has the next phase of insulation, properly embedding and protecting the work that's being put in place. That happens to be an expansion loop that's being put in for this particular section. We have not touched our Grice Hall building. I think the building was built in 1966. There's five floors. It's probably it's our business college. And as you can see in the before picture, the colors and that were chosen years ago. What we see today is the partial renovation is being completed, and in about a week we'll have the furniture that goes into all these spaces. We've gone into the hallways and the teachers, and we have freshened up so many of our buildings. We thought it was time to invest in this building, and you can see the ceilings, how dirty and grungy, and you know, we should be proud of each of our buildings as we go in. And this building is also on our master plan, scheduled for renovation. But this work we put in isn't in vain. It doesn't get torn out. This is just some preparatory work to help the morale of our faculty and staff and students. This concludes our kind of our major summer projects. You all have the rest of the list in our report that's in your document. And I do want to say that we have about 80 renovation projects that are also being managed at this time through our renovation group. which can be as small as replacing carpet to as large as the renovation project we saw in Russell.
Brian, you might have mentioned it while I was out, but your Egypt parking lot, has that water problem been eliminated?
Yes. Years ago, Western invested a significant amount of money and put in a total of 4 vortex drains. And what a vortex drain is that all the water that goes into that particular drain, it swirls as it goes down. That's why they call it a vortex. And it slings the sediment out so that it doesn't go down into our cave systems and to our earth. So, and then that is maintained under a memo of understanding with the city. And they come periodically and they'll clean the sediments and the trash out of those drains for us. And it was this cooperative effort. I probably done 2004-ish.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
The 98 hailstorm almost got to the top of the railroad tracks, to give you an example. We've had rains near that level since then, and it's never flooded. So it was the first place to flood. Now
it was last year we had it.
Yes, we did, last May, and it did not flood.
We had 10 inches of rain in 2 days, May. I think it was about May 1st.
You remember when that was old Edge Hill Shopping Center, don't you?
No. Now you're going back beyond that.
Y'all don't remember that?
No.
Well, that's one value of being located over a cave system with our karst topography under our campus. Many times our rock underpinning is problematic with a lot of it when we have to do excavation projects. But that's one example of being located over a cave system. That really served us well because that water is following the filtration process, goes right into the cave system, and there's a lot of stormwater runoff with the hill, everything flowing that direction. I mean, it's massive.
One of the projects that was done this summer by the state of Kentucky was they finally have gone down University Boulevard and cleaned out the stormwater system that goes down our section of roadway. And that had not been touched in about 13 years. And they spent weeks with a vacuum truck and cleaning it out and how much debris was collected. We still have a problem at the College Heights Boulevard intersection where Morgantown Road is, and have found out that the design of the state is that all that water stops there to go into a what they call an injection well area that will not take the water. So we still don't have that problem solved, but the university is working with the state and trying to come up with solutions of how we can get that corrected for safety. So,
you know, there's a lot of what's called green initiatives that engineering folks are looking at. What I noticed in looking at your presentation is you've got a lot of concrete, which is purely impervious surfaces, that will generate a lot of stormwater runoff. Have you ever thought, or when you start doing your planning, design, and construction, to look at, for example, using, there's such a thing called pervious concrete. There's use of pavers, which will allow the rainwater to penetrate into the ground as opposed to completely running off and looking at your sidewalks. Although they look very nice, pavers will look nice as well and would not cause as much runoff. Seems to me the university ought to be at least a leader in looking at solutions that are termed green. The roof, for example, you could actually put a green roof on there, actually put plants on it and create diversion structures so that immediately the runoff on top of that roof, which is again impervious, it looks like, can immediately go into one of your tanks that you just showed me at the beginning of the presentation. It just seems like there ought to be a policy that every building we do, every construction we do, there should at least be a look at how we can create green solutions.
He's got a good answer for you.
House Bill 1 is now law, which requires every state project to be built in LEED standards. Mm-hmm. When we do roofs and when we do parking lots, we happen to have, coincidentally, several lots that have pervious concrete in place.
Okay.
We use them in places that are obviously best suited for it. It's mm-hmm. not in every application, but where you know based upon stormwater management design where they need to be placed. So there are places and times for green roofs as well. But it's all a matter of
when you get done, the composite of the total of the project, and does it as a building function,
right,
to reach the goals from performances. And oftentimes the green roof is a nice addition, but it doesn't give you the points that you really need at the end of the day.
Okay.
So green roofs are something you see a lot of. That's when they're trying to get maybe to a platinum level of the LEED certification.
Right.
And those are very expensive propositions.
Right.
The point is, we have several impervious asphalt as well as concrete lots. We don't have any green roofs, but every building we build is according to LEED standard.
Mm-hmm.
Every renovation is. We coincidentally have more LEED certified professionals, which is a designation someone can only achieve after going through an extensive education and training process, and then they get tested. We have more LEED certified professional certified professionals on our campus than any state university in Kentucky.
That's great. Yeah.
And you're looking at one of 10 right here.
Okay, that's good.
And Larry, just one other comment to answer your question. Bowling Green, because of the karst topography, our city planning commission, going all the way back to the 60s, 70s, especially up through the 80s, they require water retention. You get no project approved unless you make provision for water runoff.
Okay.
And that's been in the code for years now. It's very expensive to comply with sometime. And having done a few building projects, we've had to use, and we're glad to, they even get down to the type of gravel you use for your fill. And then the pervious blacktop or concrete or whatever. And it's pretty hard to get a building project approved anymore that does not take those things into consideration in our building codes as they exist today.
Do we pay, is the university subject to a drainage fee or a stormwater runoff fee?
We actually just implemented an MS4. We are our own stormwater for the campus in conjunction with the city.
Right.
We actually marry their requirements of how to do erosion and prevention, sediment control. All of us in our office are EPCS certified contractors, and just completed another, what do we call it, recertification. But like our Adams Street lot is state of the art, and, and on a 2-inch rain, you don't see any of that water leaving that huge parking lot between Kentucky Street and Adams Street because of the pervious. And if you're ever out in a good rainstorm, I encourage you to go, because you'll see a large sheet of water going down the asphalt, and then it hits the pervious pavement, and it just goes, disappears.
Yeah. What is it? The plan, is it engineered on a 2-year storm event or a 10-year storm
it's
event?
It's actually, I'd have to get back with you on that one.
Oh, do we pay a drainage fee? I'm just curious.
No.
No, okay. We have our own MS4. Okay.
We have also fixed several problems. If everybody remembers how the Regents Road always flooded in any rain event, that has now been corrected.
Okay.
And we spent our money, I say ours, I take it personal, but it's Western's money to resolve that problem that's been here 30 years.
Decades.
Quite some time.
And now it doesn't do it anymore, and we bought some property on the other side of Regents and fixed that.
So how did you do it? Yes, I did notice it didn't flood last time, but how did you do it?
How did we do it?
Yeah.
We corrected
something that had been modified and changed by a previous property owner and covered up.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even though it wasn't our property, although
but
the house,
now.
I guess,
no,
is now.
When we bought it, we discovered it, the property, and we found it, and we corrected it. Now, all of a sudden, the system is functioning as it was instead of the modifications that were put in by a property owner and then covered up.
Got it. Okay.
But speaking of water, we have photographs that we can share with you of several tanks that we collect water in on campus above ground. Particularly off, the best example is a stormwater tank that we have above ground next to PS1, which collects all the water out of that garage into tanks that we then use to re-irrigate the immediate area. So our sustainability folks are on top of these things.
Great. We also added that to, which again, outside, out of mind, but our storage building that's used for facilities maintenance if you actually look at that building, you'll see all the piping goes along the side. That water is also collected and used for that purpose also. So not only are we trying to address our stormwater issues, we are also trying to be better stewards and use of our water that we use for all the beautiful landscaping that we have. So we are very aware, and I know John told me to keep it short. We evaluate the Gary A. Ransdell Hall, the Music Hall. We do evaluate the green roof scenario. A green roof on that music building was going to cost us an additional $1 million. What people don't realize in the design is that the structure must be so robust and the additional cost and then the maintenance, but it was going to cost us almost $1 million.
Trying to re-roof existing buildings makes it difficult when a building was built 30 or 40 years ago and just wasn't built to support a truly green roof.
So we do have to balance. So the cost was better to put the tanks in, collect the water, reuse it as to recall.
And I would assume, though, that some of your parking lots are part of your 100-year flood plan, so that they would flood instead of the buildings near them. Is that correct? So we could have a situation where the parking lots would flood because that's part of the building design. And again, a city planning commission requires you to do that. But much better the parking lot has skill, because people usually get a chance to move their cars. We can't move the building. So if we do someday find out we've got a torrential rain, and yes, the parking lot flooded, that was designed to do that. Correct, John?
That's correct.
Thanks for the report. Any other questions? If not, we'll move into our next segment that finishes the executive committee.